Verse 24. Sandhi. Achedyaha ayam adahyaha ayam kledyaha ashoshyaha evacha nityaha sarvagataha stanuhu achalaha ayam sanatanaha. So the first verse 23 is saying the weapons cannot cut this Atma, fire cannot burn it, water cannot wet it, and the wind cannot dry it. And now it says ayam. Ayam means ayam Atma, but now we're in the nominative. Ayam Atma, this self is achedyaha. It can't be cut. So now we're doing it from the standpoint of the self. So weapons cannot cut it, and says it. This Atma cannot be cut. It's achedyaha. It's a potential participle. Mm-hmm. Right? Ayam achedyaha. Then ayam adahyaha. From dahati to adahyaha. That negates adahyaha. It is not able to be burnt. It can't. It's a potential participle. So ayam, this self, cannot be burnt. Ayam akledyaha, this Atma cannot be wetted. Then asoshyaha evacha, and it cannot be dried, asoshyaha. Okay. It is, this Atma, these are all nominatives, is nityaha, sarvagataha, stanuhu, achalaha, ayam, this Atma, sanatanaha. So it's actually, in one sense, we're just wrapping this up now in a way. We're going to be moving on, as you'll see. We have one more verse of wrapping up. Yeah, wrapping up this little section. Why can't it be the recipient of all of this attack? Why can't it be hurt, you know, or engaged with by all of these elements and elementals? So it says, the Atma, as it's developed now, the Atma is nityaha. Nityaha means, to just, sometimes it's translated as eternal, but it's important. So nitya is a really important word. Nitya means that which is free from time. So instead of saying eternal, because when you say eternal, at least for my mind, you have the idea of it just keeps going on. It exists eternally in time. So eternal always usually will bring the sense of going on forever within time, right? But this is not that. This is that which is free from time. That which is free from time means for this there is no past, present, or future. There is just the presence, which is always present to the flow of time. And as we talked the other day, the flow of time and from past moving into the present, moving into the future like this, that's really just conceptual in terms of your experience. Because in terms of your experience, you are always only in the present. Your memories of the past are in the present. Your projections of the future are in the present. And then the present, of course, is in the present, and you are the presence of that present. So we talked about that. But being the presence of the present, or the presence in which time takes place, is free from time. So the Atma is free from time, which is unlike anything in the creation. The entire creation exists within time and space and change. The Atma, if your being is free from time, past, present, and future, you're free from change. You're nityaha. But I forgot, I have to read, so I need my glasses. Okay. So you are nityaha. Okay. If you're nityaha, you cannot be an object in the creation. So what's interesting about that, you can't be an object in the creation. It's another way of saying that is, you cannot be objectified. Any object in the creation is something that can enjoy a subject-object relationship. You can know it. The Atma is yourself, is not something that can become an object to you, because if it becomes an object to you, we are now in duality. Right now there's a subject and an object. Now you're within time, you're within space. And so for that which is free of time is free of objectification, right? Because there's no change for you. There's no way to be anything other than what you are. You have no beginning. You have no end. You're not subject to object. You're not subject to time. And therefore, you're not existing in the universe as an object. Try to think of an object in the universe that is free from time. You can say it lasts a long time, but it's not free from time. It comes into being, it goes out of being, and it changes, and goes through the it goes through change at whatever pace it does. Now, if something is nitya, it's not only ajaha, free from birth and free from death, you know, vinasha, avinasha. It's not just that. It's free from change in the middle, you know. And so that being the case, the Atma can only be as it is. No change. You can only be as you are. So the self that you are right now, this conscious being that you are now, is how you have always been and always will be. This, you are only the presence of the present. Right? So for you, there's no modification at all. Nor can you be objectifiable. Okay. So now, what is like that in the creation? There's nothing. For one thing, everything in the creation is objectifiable. You know what? About that. Not only are all of the things you perceive as these, this is known, this is known, this is known, not only are those things objectifiable, but the one who perceives them is objectifiable. Right? I am the subject aware of the object. Right. So let's think about that just for a minute, because we want to think that the Atma, yourself, is the knower, right? Is a knower or a doer. But this can't be true, because for someone to be a knower, there has to be a known. That's dual. Subject-object. If somebody's the subject, there has to be an object. Subject-object. That is dual, right? And so for nitya, when we do this drik-drisha-viveka, the seer-seen differentiation, what happens is not only is the world that I perceive objectified, but the perceiver is also objectified. Right? Because say, I say, I'm aware of this, so it's objectified. Right? Just by the mere fact that I have a subject-object relationship with all of you, you are all objectified, and I'm sitting here, I'm objectified. Okay? I'd be made into an object. That's what objectified means. I mean, I have a subject-object relationship, and so we use this verbal form. You are therefore an objectified person. Okay? You're all objectified. But you know what? And then I could say, well, yes, that's true, you're all objects. But then I keep discovering that the actual knower of the object is also objectified. It is also known. Like, for instance, you can say, I know all of you because of my sense organs. But the sense organs are also known, right? So in case of, if you look at like the seer seen or the hearer heard, right? The heard is the object, the seer is the subject, like that. Or the seen is the object, the seer is the subject. That's how we start. But in reality, both what I see is known and the instrument of seeing, the eyes, are also known. You know if you're blind, you know if you have good vision, you know if you don't have good vision, you know, the fact that you're focused on an object, all that whole thing is known. So the subject is objectified, and so is the object. And then when we did the Drik Drisha, you realize, you know, it's because of my mind, because I have a mind that utilizes these instruments, that causes these instruments, my sense organs, to be known. To object, that's why I can objectify them. So, all right, they're just instruments. They're objectified as well as whatever they see is objectified. But then I realize, you know, the mind itself is objectified because I know what I feel, I know what I think. Right? So the one who I make into a knower as the subject, I take to be me, the subject, that one is also known. Right? So in this world of duality, it's not just the things that are categorized as known. Those aren't the only things that are known. Also, the knower is known. So the subject, object, both are known. So in fact, in Vedanta we say, I am the self of both subject and object. So that means I am the self of what I perceive, what is known, all of the nama-rupas that are known, but I am also the self of the one who knows them. You know? And if you think about it, when we look at what actually about me and in my experience belongs to Maya, to what is responsible for this whole manifestation of the creation, it's everything that I can objectify, not only about the world, but about me. And what I can objectify is my body and all of my thoughts and all of my emotions, all of my sense organs, even the I thought, you know, all of my memories, all of my relationships. I can objectify everything that I actually becomes an identify with as myself. I recognize that all of this is known as well as everything that this knows. So that has to be that way, actually, because you can't, this world can't be you, and the ones who exist in this world, that which exists in this world, also can't be you. It's not, it can be you in reality, but from its own standpoint, it's only mithya. Because everything that you identify with as yourself is continually changing. Every single thing, every experience, everything about you as a knower, as a perceiver, as a doer, as somebody who has all these emotions, all of these things that I identify with as me, all of them, without any exception, exist in time, and they're continually changing and continually coming and going. You know, they're known. So you end up having to put everything about yourself, except of course yourself, but everything about yourself that you had identified as you, has to go into the universe. It has to belong to Ishwara. It has to belong to the creation. You know. Because it does belong to the creation. Just imagine you have a dream, and then you think the knower of the dream, is that going to be a little person sitting there outside the dream, knowing the dream? There's no little person sitting outside of the dream, knowing the dream. Right? The little person, whoever that may be, is part and parcel of the dream. There is no little person within time and space who is aware of the dream. That's not the source of awareness, because that little person is known and is part and parcel of the dream. And yet we experience whoever you're identified with in the dream as being both known and a knower, which is true. It is a knower within the dream, but it itself is known. And you experience the whole dream as being known. But the one who experiences, that's also tricky. Who experiences the dream as being known? Who experiences the world, this world, as being known? Who experiences the body and the mind and the sense organs and my moods and emotions as being known? Is there some little knower sitting out there? Or outside, a little knower sitting out there of time and space, having its own little qualities that have nothing that don't exist within time and space? That's not possible. There can't be any little person outside of time and space sitting there knowing. Because there's no time and space. There's no room for that little person because there's no space. Time and space itself is objectified. And so that's what we were saying the other day. There is no knower. You don't need a knower. You can't find a knower. The more you analyze your experience, all you find is that which is known. You know, this wall is known, you are all known, this body is known, these clothes are known, my sense organs are known, my thoughts are known, my emotions are known, the ahankara, the I notion is known, I am known. There's only knownness. There's no knower. I am the very being which allows for the duality of knowership which exists within the creation. Knower known. The knower is known and enjoys consciousness. The known is known and enjoys consciousness. The whole thing actually is known because that's who I am. I am the self-evident me. You know, you think of just me. Do I always have to be? Do you always think of yourself as a knower? Somebody's knowing this, annoying that, annoying this, annoying that. We don't, we don't think like that. I just am. I am just me. You know. In fact, I'm not doing anything because I am Nityaha. I am Nityaha. I am not an object in the creation bound by time. I simply am. I'm not bound by time. I'm not bound by space, which means I'm no particular size, because size and all of these dimensions and all that, that belongs to Maya. That belongs to the creation. I simply am. They say, yeah, but what size am I? Well, let's say it like this. It's not about size. It's that there's nothing else but you. So what size is that going to be? There's nothing but you. And so if time and space belongs to Maya, time and space comes with a dream. All duality belongs to Maya, that which is mitya and totally depends on me even for its being. Then time, space, dimension, all of these concepts belong to the universe. They belong to Ishwara. They belong to mitya. They are Maya. So when you ask, well, what size am I? Anyway, forget it. What size am I? Just tell me, what size am I? You are not a size. The concept of size and dimension belongs to Maya. Size is objectifiable. It requires duality. And so I am not a size. I'm not a weight. I'm not a color. Right? These things all belong to duality. I am the conscious being, which is Advaita, which is non-dual, which is one without a second. If you, once you start thinking of size, you're in duality. I just go on forever. That means I'm traveling along. I'm huge. Okay, I'm huge. That means that I go on. My dimensions are in. I have infinite dimension. You know, but infinite dimension involves space. You know, I don't have space. Space exists in me. I don't have time. Time, all that belongs to Maya. So what's really beautiful is you're kind of hearing all of these words, you know. When we do meditation or you're just sitting with yourself doing your own contemplation, one beautiful contemplation is to say, okay, just gently focus on your own being. And you say, okay, what size am I? Focusing just being with yourself, not with your body or not with your thoughts or anything like that, just with you. What size am I? You know? The question falls away because we are in a different order of reality. We are not in the order of reality of Maya and time and space. We are, and if you are not part of that order of reality, you know, then those things don't belong to you, right? But you are, right? But the thing is, you are, and you are free of time, you are free of space. So there is no limitation to you, but then the next word he uses, you are nityaha and you are sarvagataha. You are free of time, you are the presence of all experience, and you are pervasive. Now the word sarva means all, and gataha means you have gone everywhere. So it's sarvagataha, it means all pervasive. But you are all pervasive. You're nitya, you're free of time, you're free of space, but you're all pervasive. All pervasive to who? You know, I'm not all pervasive to myself. Well, you can maybe say that. I'm all pervasive to myself because there's nothing but me. In that way, from my own standpoint, I'm homogeneous. There's no second thing. I am just, there is nothing here but me. But from the standpoint of Maya, from the standpoint of this creation, which includes my own body, my sense organs, from the standpoint of this creation, is there any place that I am not? Is there any corner of the creation where I am not? So just to kind of understand, if I ask you to have and imagination, say imagine a beautiful forest scene, for example, is there any place in that imagination that you do not pervade? Can you have a thought? Can you have an imagination where maybe there's a little hole over here where you are not? Is there any kind of little secret place in that imagination where you are not? No. It's not possible. Because you're the very sat-chit, you're the very conscious being, the self-evident me, which is the very being from which this mithya imagination comes. And if once you understand mithya, if there was some little hole that where I wasn't, that thing wouldn't be there. Because it would not exist. All existence that any experience that you have, the existence itself is Brahman, is the Atma. Nothing here in our experience itself has existence to be hiding out away from Atma, away from yourself. It has no existence to even conceive of. It's absolutely impossible to do it because the being that it enjoys is the Atma, not itself. And why? Because of time and change, because of birth and death, because everything that you experience is bordered by non-existence. Everything. Anything that changes as a prior condition of non-existence and a posterior condition of non-existence. So it can't just become existent, right? Because non-existence doesn't exist for it all of a sudden to become existence. That's not going to happen. It cannot do it. And so that means that it has to come into existence which is already there. And the existence which is already there also can't have a prior condition or a posterior condition, or it also doesn't exist. Right? So the being that can't come into being or go out of being can't be part of it. It has to be the adhishtana of the creation. It can't be the creation itself. Right? Adhishtana means the very essence of what is actually there. So that's the conscious being, which it cannot be objectifiable. If you're objectifiable, you exist within time and space. So it has to be that which is free of time and space in order for it to exist at all. You know? Otherwise, it exists because it's enjoying me. It exists because I exist, not because it has an existence. It exists because I exist. And so when you have an imagination or an experience of any kind, you know, and a great dimension, like say in a starry night, like sometimes at the farm, and I know that it's on a clear night, it's like that here too. It's on a dark, starry night, you look up, you know, and your mind just takes in the whole, you know, the whole sky, the whole night sky with all of the stars, the whole night sky. That is really big, you know, really big. But there's no part of that thought, that vritti, that thought modification that is away from you. It's impossible. You are the sat-chit, you are the conscious being, you know, which pervades that vritti from the standpoint of the vritti. Vritti means the thought, from the standpoint of the thought. You can't have a thought which is not pervaded by you because then that wouldn't exist. Right? Wouldn't exist. So that's what they mean. So you're not only your nityaha, which allows you to be and means that you must be sarvagataha, all pervasive to whatever is here, because you are the being that allows anything to be here. Right? So without you, there cannot be anything here. So of course, you're sarvagataha. You're all pervasive. And then it says, stanuhu, because you're not within space, you are stanuhu. You can't move. You are motionless. You are motionless. See, if you were in space, say you were like Shankar uses, you know, you can't move like a tree can't move. Right? You're immovable. You're stanuhu. You are in one place only. But you're unlike in the creation. Say, if you're a tree, I could cut down the tree. But because I'm in time and space and all of the other elements and elementals can come and move that thing. But here, for me, where would I move to? Say I want to move over a few inches. Let me just move a few inches over. Take the Atma, just let's shift our position just a few inches. But I would have to be in time to make that shift. I would have to be in space. But I'm free of space. So where is there going to be a shift? There's no space to make a shift. Where are there going to be any kind of boundaries? So to move, we'll shift the boundaries a little bit. But for even for there to be boundaries, there has to be duality. You have to be within space. So for me, there is no second thing for me to move anywhere. It's not like here I am, pure awareness, and outside is all this non-awareness. If that were possible, it would have to be that awareness itself exists within duality and within space, so we can have like a big circle of awareness and a big circle of non-awareness outside of it. That's two. So for me, there's not an inside or an outside. There's only me. And so there's no movement. I can't walk away, you know. But then Bhagavan thinks, yeah, but he might think, when I say stanuhu, that stanuhu, I'm stable like a tree. I can't walk away. But the leaves on the tree and the wind, it keeps shifting. So maybe I'm stanuhu, I can't move, but inside of myself or from my own upadhi, I'm not moving, I can't walk away, but I'm doing all kinds of movement, you know. Mm-hmm. But how can that be? How can there be any movement when there's no objectification? Where are there going to be parts? How can I have parts? Once you're more than one, you're two, right? You're two. To be two, or to even be one thing that has two parts, you have to be in space, because then you have to have a right side and a left side, a top, a bottom. There's difference then. If there's difference, you are already in space. So not only is there no other being for me to move, you know, to move space, some space for me to shift my position, even from within myself, there are no parts to shift or to change. So I'm not only stanuhu, I'm achalaha. Achalaha means free of any type of movement. All of these concepts that are so common and we take for granted for ourselves, for who I am, I'm continually moving about and continually changing. My mind is always moving and changing. We just take that for granted. And we haven't caught, recognized the very present reality that all of this change is taking place in me, who is changeless. The fact that I'm changeless in all ways is self-evident once I'm aware of it. It's self-evident because you are here. It's not like you're just some conceptualization. You're not a concept. You are. So I am Atma, this self that I am. This self that I am. How can I move about or change? I have no such experience. I have the experience of my body changing. I have the experience of my sense organs changing and going through time and growing old and going through all these modifications. I have the experience of my mind changing, of my emotions changing, of my relationships changing, of the ahankara continuing to identify with this and then with that. I have experience only of endless change in reference to this body, mind, sense organs, but I never, ever have the experience of change in reference to me. Because all of these experiences that, even though I identify them as me, take place in the same me. It's the same, I am the same one. The one who's having this experience is the one who had that experience, is the one who had that experience. The one who is happy is the one who is sad. The one who is old is the one who is young. It's not somebody else. If it's somebody else, that's somebody else. See? You say, that's somebody else. Okay, it's somebody else. It's not you. You don't know anything about it then. It is. So there's a lot of other people, right? But your experiences don't belong to other people. They belong only to you. But everything that you've identified as you comes and goes. But you never come and go. So, as I said the other day, that's the really kind of Achilles heel in terms of getting self-knowledge, you know, the thing that is kind of irrefutable, and also it's recognizable, because everything in my experiences changes except for me and I am. So you would think that we would be able to differentiate me, the one who is always present, from everything else that is always changing. You know, I'll tell you, the reason that we're not able to do that is because we don't even consider me. We only consider me, yourself, from the standpoint of the mind, right? And so I'm having that experience. You're only recognizing yourself in reference to your pervasiveness of the, you're pervading the mind from the standpoint of the mind. So you are the mind who has this body, right? And so you don't bother to think, to recognize that there's a stable presence in reference to all of your experiences. The stable presence for you is this body, mind, sense organs, and this stable presence will be here as long as it's alive, even though, you know, it was born and it will die, and now it goes on changing and growing old. This person who is changing and growing old is still me. This is who I am. This is the one who's having all of these experiences. But even this one, that I have my own logic, you know, upon analysis, this one is continually changing also. And not only that, this one that you say is you is actually known, is actually objectified. And you are not. You, the subject, the me, the self, I can't look at me. I can only be me. You can't look at me. Even with knowledge, I differentiate all of these things that I realize are objectified. I differentiate those things from this self-evident me, which all of those things enjoy when they are there, and only when they're there. They enjoy in the sense of, if I have a thought, that thought is known. If I have an experience, that experience is known. As long as the experience is there, it is known. As soon as it moves on, it's no longer known. Then whatever there is next is known. So this is knownness is my own self-evident being. And that self-evident being me is never something which is objectified. So he says, yes, achalaha, he says, stanuhu, achalaha, no movement for me, and then sanatanaha. Sanatanaha means I'm always here in exactly the same way. I'm beginningless and I'm endless, and in between I'm exactly the same, sanatana. I continue as I am, free of time. And so as I start to recognize myself, then let's do the next verse. You have to do it.
I'll get
Abhyakto yam achinchoyam
avihāryo yamuchyate
tasmāt evam viditvainam nānuśocitum arhasi
sandhi avyaktaha ayam achintyaha ayam avikāryaha ayam uchyate tasmāt evam viditvā enam na anusocitum arhasi. He says, ayam atma, this atma, is avyaktaha. Because of everything we've just been talking, actually, yourself is not subject to modification, because it doesn't exist within time and space. It's all part of really understanding also different order of reality. It can't come into manifestation. How can it? It has no parts. It's non-dual. Anything that's coming and going exists within Maya. It exists within time and space, and these things can come into manifestation. I am already completely manifest, but not as an object, just as conscious being. I am absolutely, completely manifest. I never go into unmanifest condition. I am manifest only as the Satchit conscious being that I am, the me that I am. Manifest in the sense of not a manifestation that is subject to objectification. That's what we mean by something becoming manifest. So Maya itself goes from the unmanifest to the manifest. I don't go from unmanifest to manifest and then back into unmanifest. When the Upanishad says, I am always awake. I am always awake. I don't have any sleep. I don't have any change. I'm not objectifiable at all in any way. So as I am, I am. I don't go into any other state of being. So I am avyaktaha. Avyakta means to become manifest. I am avyaktaha. That doesn't apply to me. I need duality to come into that type of manifestation. And therefore, really, I am achintyaha. Achintya means you can't think of me. Like I am like this or I am like that. I can't. Chint means I can I have a vritti of myself? Let me have a vritti of myself. You can't really have a vritti of yourself because yourself is already totally present as the very manifest being, the self-evident being that is the self of the vritti. So how can it become something for you to know? It's already known, you know? It's already known in terms of myself as a conscious being. It's not like I don't know myself. I just don't know who I am. I know myself experientially as me. But the mind has self-ignorance, and so it takes itself to be me. That's the mistake. The me is not the mistake. The me is true. When you think of me, this very personal me that you are, that makes you, the self that I am, that is true. What is not true is that I am dependent upon the mind or the body or the sense organs or the universe. Oh, your universe and everything in it is mithya. It depends upon me. I don't depend upon it. But how can my mind think about me? I'm not an object in the universe. I'm not a verb. I'm not a guna. I'm not a quality. I'm not a relationship. All of these now, all of the words that we have are verbal or relational in some way, or they're talking about some sort of substance or some sort of a quality. I am free of all of that. So how are you going to think about me? Even if you think, well, let me think about me, 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 me. That me is going to be loaded with all kinds of qualities. It's going to be loaded with the shape of my body and the qualities that my body has and the type of mind I have and the type of emotions I have. But if it's just me, even for jnani, how can I think about me? I can use words that point to me. I'm not thinking about me. I'm using words that can point to me, like you are absolute shanti. You are consciousness itself. You are asangaha. Yeah. But those words have to land on me. They themselves aren't going to hold me. They can't hold me because all of these words exist within duality and are talking about something else. Some object like shanti is relative shanti. Silence is relative silence. You know? Changelessness is relative changelessness. Like a mountain is changeless or space is changeless. So all of the words and all the concepts we have exist within duality. We have to recognize my being, right? My being which is present and the self of every concept. I am the self, the truth of every concept. So what concept is going to hold me? You know, in fact, concepts are a problem. Unless they can point to me, they're a problem. Even words like say you say Satchitananda, the Atma is bliss. Bliss is a concept. It's a relative experience. And now I say the Atma, because Satchitananda, the Atma is Ananda. That's translated as bliss. I am bliss. That's not going to work. I can't even use that word to teach or point to you, because you'll just say, everybody else is experiencing bliss. Everybody else must have bliss. Because the teacher is pointing, you are bliss. And then everybody is thinking to themselves, I'm not experiencing because it's a concept, it's a use of a word that is very difficult to make that word land on me, because bliss is an extreme state of mind that comes and goes. It comes and goes. We know what bliss is. I'm sure we've all had bliss states of one sort or another. But those states all come and go. So then you're in this relative hierarchy, and we think, well, there must be a bliss state existing somewhere that is myself, that now I have to go and discover myself, this bliss waiting to be discovered. That's not going to be the case. If there's a bliss waiting somewhere to be discovered, that exists within duality. That's Maya. So then you are Maya then. You know, you exist within time and space, and you have, well, Swamiji would go something like, you have bleep, bleep, bliss. 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 It's not how it is. That you are ever-present. You are ever-present. So whatever they mean by that word, ananda, bliss, however we translate it, it has to land on you. And you have to, then you end up saying, because I remember saying this to myself, oh, that's what they mean. That's what they mean by ananda. That's what the Shastra means by ananda when they say, I am sat, I am being, I am consciousness, I am ananda, which is translated as bliss. That's what they mean. Because you recognize that your nature, that there is nothing more beloved. There's nothing more dear to you. And when you recognize that, then your mind will go, ah, okay, that's what they mean. Because we think of bliss as the most beloved state, in a way, what we want the most, that is, which is absolute fullness, absolute happiness. But another way of talking about it is meaning that which is the most dear, that which is the most dear. That's what they mean by ananda. And that which is most dear is ever-present, completely present. You're just not used to looking at what is always there. You're used to comparing one vritti and one experience to another, not recognizing the nature of you yourself who is present to every vritti. That is ananda. But we can't use this pramana by trying to define the words. We have to use the words continually to be as pointers. Because you are there to be recognized, right? It's not like we're defining something and then you say, okay, well, this is what I am, so now I have to become that or find that. Words aren't used that way. Words are used always pointing to the one who is already here, you know? So that's how the pramana works. So otherwise, you are achintyaha. You're not some thing that can be objectified. And ayam avikariyaha. You're not subject to any type of change or modification. Vikariya means you're free of modification, you're free of time. So this me, which is ananda, which is the most beloved, it is never not here, it has never not been here. It has always been you. That's when you gain self-knowledge, you'd say also, I've always been here. There's never, you know, very clearly, I've always been here. There's never been a time. This is always who I've been. But I didn't know myself. I only knew myself through the lens of my mind and body. The mind, the me, is pervading the mind and body and everything, actually. So the mind and body enjoy this sense of me, which is true. It's like the pot enjoys and it has its reality as the clay, which is true. But what is different here is that that's true. You know, the me that is you is you. You just don't recognize it. You haven't differentiated it from all of your experiences to know that you are the changeless one present to all of your experiences. And that one is avikariyaha. Avikara. Vikara means change or modification. Avikara means no change, no modification. Avikariya is a potential. It means the one, it's an abstract, the one whose nature is free from any type of change. So avikariyaha, ayam, this self that I am, is said to be, is said by the wise, to be avyaktaha, achintyaha, avikariyaha. Tasmat. So now Krishna says, okay, we're going to wind this up now. Tasmat. Therefore, having known in this manner, evam viditva enam, having known in this manner, Na anusocitum arhasi. You have no cause for grief. You have no reason to grieve. In verse 11 of this chapter, this is really a major wind-up, but you'll see how he's going to go on. That's really interesting. In verse 11 of this chapter, Bhagavan says, Asochan anvasochastvam. He says, you are grieving over things that don't deserve any grief. Asochan anvasochastvam. Pregnavadams chabhashase. And at the same time, you're speaking all of these words of wisdom, because he's giving Krishna a lecture on dharma, you know, and what really needs to be done to protect the people. And if I go and fight this war and kill off everybody, there'll only be women left. There won't be any men left. How can we have a family? How can it grow? You know, everything will be destroyed. The dharma itself will be destroyed. I can't kill all of these people. I can't do it. It's wrong, Krishna. It is wrong. So Krishna's listening to this lecture, this really intense lecture. You can read it. It's like in the last part of the first chapter and the first part. It's really beautiful. He's so certain of himself. So Krishna is smiling and enjoying him. You know, and so happy that he is really starting to become a mamoksha. So he says, so Arjuna, you're speaking all these words of wisdom, and yet, you know, you're grieving for that which doesn't deserve any grief. And then he says, gatasun agatasuncha na anusochanti panditaha. The wise people, those people who have knowledge, they don't grieve after those people, the living or the dead. They don't grieve. And so, of course, this statement is called a pratignya. This is like an initial statement of a huge logical syllogism. Because he's going to say, Arjuna's going to say, what do you mean? How can I not grieve? Why would I not grieve? He's saying the jnanis, people who have knowledge, don't grieve over the living or the dead. And so what he's done now in this first part is make you recognize the self, which is changeless. Your being, which doesn't have any birth or death. There is no birth of death for you or for Arjuna or for all of the kings and all of the people and the beloved ones that he's worried about are going to be killed or going to die. He makes clear there is no such thing as death. The Atma is free of birth and death, free of change. And now he's going to say something like, and even for the body, mind, sense organs that are continually being born and dying, what are you going to do about that? That's their nature. And so he's just going to take it to another level. Even that you can't grieve for, as though people are not going to die. People are not going to be born. The whole universe is in a constant process of birth and death on every single level. So if we're going to be grieving for that, we have a lot of grieving to do. So now he's going to go into this next level. So